I'd like to look this morning at the life of David, the well-known king of Israel from the Old Testament. Although I want to look at David's life before he became king, I'd like to look at the work of God in David's life, the work of God's grace. And so the sermon title is David and the Grace of God. David was also well known for his psalm writing. He wrote in praise of God, and he also wrote about his distress and his deliverance by God on many occasions. David wrote in Psalm 62 from verse 5, "For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence, for my hope is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress, I shall not be shaken. On God rests my salvation and my glory. My mighty rock, my refuge is God. Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your hearts before him. God is a refuge for us." So David put his trust in the Lord, and he encouraged others to pour out their hearts to God, to wait on God alone. David's experience of being helped by God is something that's shared by countless believers down the generations. And many other songwriters have also written about God's help. There's the famous song from John Newton, which includes the words, "Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home." So the grace of God was a constant companion to David throughout his life. And the grace of God is a constant companion to all believers throughout our lives. But the grace of God does not prevent difficulties. It rather helps us to endure. Before David became king, he endured a long time of severe testing, a testing that developed his character and his leadership, the testing that prepared him for the great work of leading God's people in faithfulness to God. This important time in David's life, before he became king, culminated in a traumatic episode, which is recorded in 1 Book of Samuel chapter 30. And we'll look at that a little later, but first I want to look at some earlier chapters in 1 Samuel to see how David got to that place in chapter 30. At the same time as David was experiencing the events of chapter 30, elsewhere, King Saul was dying. He was killed in battle against the Philistines together with his son Jonathan. Jonathan was David's friend and ally. But David wasn't with Saul and Jonathan in this battle, because Saul had driven a rift between himself and David. Saul had become convinced that David was trying to take his crown, and he was therefore trying to kill David. David had been forced to flee for his life. There was a tension between Saul and David. But the Bible doesn't tell us that either Saul or David was all good or all bad. It shows us that they were both sinners in need of God's grace. They both fell short of God's standards and needed forgiveness and help. But the Bible also shows us a contrast between Saul and David. The difference being that Saul rejected the grace of God, but David welcomed God's grace and humbled himself before the Lord. So when Israel clamored for a king to be like all the other nations, the Lord appointed Saul as king over Israel. Saul started well, but it wasn't long before his obedience to the Lord became a partial obedience to suit himself. And when Saul proved to be false, the Lord rejected him from being king of Israel, and he sent the prophet Samuel to anoint David to be king in his place. We read in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 1. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you grieve over Saul, since I have rejected him from being king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided for myself a king among his sons." So when, when Saul learned that David had been anointed king in his place, he became fearful and jealous of David, and this is when he tried to kill him, and when David had to flee for his life. We read in 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 14, "And David remained in the strongholds in the wilderness, in the hill country of the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not give him into his hand." So God did not give David into Saul's hand. God was in control of this tension between Saul and David. And in the midst of their human strife, God was at work for good. And so God did not give David into Saul's hand. But on two separate occasions, the Lord did give Saul into David's hand. We don't have time to have a look at all, both of them, but we'll take a look at the first time that the Lord gave Saul into David's hand. Saul was pursuing David with the intention of catching him and killing him. Saul left his troops outside when he went into the cave to relieve himself, not knowing that David and all his men were also in that cave hiding. So David had opportunity to kill Saul, but he didn't do that. He allowed Saul to leave, blissfully unaware that David had been in the cave with him. And then David took a risk. He followed Saul out of the cave and revealed to Saul that he had just spared Saul's life. And we read in 1 Samuel chapter 24 from verse 16. As soon as David had finished speaking these words to Saul, Saul said, "Is this your voice, my son David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. He said to David, "You are more righteous than I, for you have repaid me good, whereas I have repaid you evil. And you have declared this day how you have dealt well with me, and that you did not kill me when the Lord put me into your hands. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him go away safe? So may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done to me this day. And now, behold, I know that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel will be established in your hand. Swear to me, therefore, by the Lord, that you will not cut off my offspring after me, and that you will not destroy my name out of my father's house." And David swore this to Saul. Then Saul went home, but David and his men went up to the stronghold. So Saul was conflicted. He knew the judgments of God were just and true. He knew that David is more righteous than him. But he could not let go of this determination to hold on to the kingship at any cost. When David spared his life, Saul came to his senses, but it wouldn't last. The fear of losing the kingship was always with Saul. So Saul was conflicted. What about David? The Lord had promised David the kingdom, and now the Lord had put Saul into David's hand. Was this providence, or was it testing? It was a searching question for David. David's men knew the answer. They urged him to take the opportunity to kill Saul and take the crown. David saw that he needed to do the right thing. 1 Samuel 24, verse 6. David said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed." The Lord had anointed Saul to be king. David was not about to undo what God had done. The Lord had promised David the throne, and David was determined to receive the kingdom by the means that God approves. David's greater son, Jesus, faced a similar testing. The devil offered Jesus all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. But all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor had already been promised to Jesus by God the Father. And Jesus was determined that God's will should be come to pass in God's way. Jesus would not take the way of the devil. Jesus would take the way of submission to his Father. He would take the way of submission to the humiliation of the cross. He would take the way of the cross in order to perfectly fulfill the will of the Father. And we as Jesus' disciples also need to be wary of shortcuts. We need to be wary of the easy option. As Jesus' disciples, we need to pray for discernment. The transformation into the likeness of Christ is a long and difficult process, and we need to pray for discernment. The Apostle Paul is our example in this. He wrote to the church in Philippi, Philippians chapter 1, verses 9 to 11. Paul writes to the church, "And it is my prayer that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve what is excellent, and so be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ, to the glory and praise of God." So God gives discernment to those who ask. He gives wisdom to know how to live pure and blameless. And in David's case, David exercised godly discernment, and so he passed the test with Saul. David was faithful to his promise to Saul not to kill Saul's family after he became king. But David knew that Saul was not to be trusted, and so David kept his distance from Saul. David's faithfulness to the unfaithful Saul is Christ-like, for Jesus is faithful to us, even when we are unfaithful to him. And Jesus is faithful to his mission to complete in us the good work that he has begun. And in the same way, Jesus maintained his faithfulness to David. The Lord continued to keep David safe from Saul. Although wherever David went throughout Israel, there was always somebody ready to report his location to Saul. And then Saul would come out, seeking him, hunting him, with the view of finding him and killing him. So although the Lord was keeping David safe from Saul, David's life was precarious. And there came a time when David gave in to despair and his faith wavered. 1 Samuel chapter 27, verses 1 and 2. Then David said in his heart, "Now I shall perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than that I should escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will despair of seeking me any longer within the borders of Israel, and I shall escape out of his hand." So David arose and went over, he and the 600 men who were with him, to Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. The years of being hunted by Saul, of fearing for his life, has caught up with David, and his faith wavers. He takes his eyes off his sure refuge in God. A refuge that he's sang about on many occasions in his Psalms. David, as the rule of his life, put his hope in God as his refuge. But under the sustained threat from Saul, David takes his eyes off his sure refuge in God and sees only the treacherous Saul determined to take his life. And so David puts his trust in the Philistines instead of the Lord his God. Under severe pressure, David seeks a safe sanctuary for himself and his followers. But it doesn't matter how severe the pressure is. What really matters is how the pressure affects us. Does the pressure come between us and God, or does it push us towards God? When David went into exile in the land of the Philistines, there is no mention of God in the Bible text. It seems as though at this time in David's life, he took his eyes off the pressure, pushed him away from his refuge in God. And so David went to Achish, the king of Gath, one of the territories of the Philistines. And David and his men became a mercenary band of soldiers for King Achish. They were given an isolated town to live in called Ziklag, where they could live and from where they could operate. They became a band of raiders, and they made raids on groups of Geshurites, Gerzites, and Amalekites. Now, these people weren't Philistines and they weren't Israelites. David took the plunder from these raids to King Achish, and he told the king that he'd been raiding Israelite settlements in order to keep favor with the king. This pleased the king and fooled him into thinking that David was making himself odious to the people of Israel. There was, however, a serious problem with this strategy. David didn't want anybody telling Achish, the true target of his raids, that they were not Israelite settlements. And so wherever David went raiding, he killed everybody, men, women, and children. none were left alive. In an earlier time in David's life, when he was first fleeing from Saul and he was on his own, he went to a priest to ask for supplies of food and weapons. And the priest assumed that David was on a secret mission for Saul. And so he gave him the supplies he asked for. But there was also a man from Edom present. And later, this Edomite told Saul what had happened. Saul was furious and he accused the priest of treachery and had him killed together with the other priests that were with him. So when David heard about this, he said, "I knew I shouldn't have left that Edomite alive to tell my secret to Saul." So maybe David has learned his lesson and maybe he's now acting wisely in his own eyes by killing all these witnesses to keep his secret safe from Achish. Whatever his motive, David has not only become a raider, he's also become a butcher. This David's desperate decision to leave Israel is having unwanted effects, unwanted consequences. And there is another unwanted consequence about to arise because the Philistines are gathering together to battle against Israel. And King Achish wants David and his men with him in the battle. What a dilemma for David. If David was to fight with the Philistines against Israel, he would be forfeiting his hope of becoming king of Israel. And he would also be seen to be rejecting God's calling on his life. But on the other hand, if David was to try and fight against the Philistines in the midst of their armies, he would likely find that the Philistines were far more efficient at killing David than Saul ever was. There's still no word from God in this part of David's story. But we do now begin to see the hand of God at work in the Bible narrative. Achish and his men, with David and his men, arrive at the Philistine camp. The other kings of the Philistines are aghast when they see David. In 1 Samuel chapter 29, verse 5, the other lords of the Philistines say to Achish, "Is not this David of whom they sing to one another in dances? Saul has struck down his thousands, and David his 10,000s. So the other lords of the Philistines dismiss the possibility that David could remain loyal to Achish during the fighting. They point to this infamous Israelite song, which testifies to David's loyalty to Israel and also to his prowess at killing Philistines. So David is sent away from the Philistine camp. In the midst of the Philistine camp, the Lord has used the Philistines themselves to rescue David from his life-threatening dilemma. David's cleverness, David's foolishness, has got him into a mess that he couldn't get out of himself. But the Lord delivered him. The Lord had delivered David from the hand of Saul on many occasions. Now the Lord was delivering David from David himself. The Lord delivered David by virtue of his own mercy, which is new every morning. So David returned to Ziklag in the outskirts of Gath. relieved that he's been released from the battle. Likely he would be thanking God for his narrow escape. But when David comes to Ziklag, there is bad news. Another devastating blow for David. 1 Samuel chapter 30, verses 1 to 6. Now when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day, the Amalekites made a raid against the Negev and against Ziklag. They had overcome Ziklag and burned it with fire, and taken captive the women and all who were in it, both small and great. They killed no one, but carried them off and went their way. And when David and his men came to the city, they found it burned with fire, and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him raised their voices and wept until they had no more strength to weep. David's two wives also had been taken captive, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because all the people were bitter in soul, each for his sons and daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. These Amalekite raiders had taken advantage of the fighting between Israel and the Philistines, and they had made raids on territories, settlements in Gath and Judah, including Ziklag. There were no dead bodies in Ziklag, but all the people had been taken captive. And the fate of these captives was likely to be sold into some form of servitude where they would have nothing to look forward to apart from a life of misery. We read in verse 4, David and the people who were with him raised their voices and wept until they had no more strength to weep. With what little strength they had left, some of the people spoke of stoning David because of their bitterness and anguish. So no sooner had David got his hopes up from the rescue from the battlefield than his hopes were now dashed. And even people from his own followers were threatening to kill him. How many more blows could David take? We might ask, how many blows can any child of God take? Jesus said to his followers in John chapter 15, verse 20, "Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will also keep yours." So a servant is not greater than his master. And we follow in the footsteps of Jesus. Jesus also said to his disciples in John chapter 16, verse 33, "I have said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world." So Jesus is in control of the blows that we take. He has gone before us and he has overcome the world. Jesus is in control of the pressure that we come under. I said earlier that what matters is how the pressure affects us, whether it comes between us and God or whether it pushes us nearer to God. And now here with David, we see that at this time in his life, the pressure pushes him nearer to God. We read in verse 6 that David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. What does it mean that David strengthened himself in the Lord his God? First thing it means is that David strengthened himself in the Lord, his God. David had a personal relationship with God. You may recall his confident assertion in Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd." And the great shepherd himself, Jesus, said to his followers in John chapter 10, verse 27, "My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they will never perish, and no one will snatch them out of my hand." Our strength comes from our personal relationship with Jesus. It is he who will keep us from perishing. On a previous occasion in David's life, we read in 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 16, "And Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh and strengthened his hand in God." We are then told how Jonathan strengthened David's hand in God. In verse 17, "And he said to him, 'Do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Saul, my father, also knows this.' And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord." So Jonathan reminds David of the promise of God to make David king. And Jonathan asserts his confidence that this word from the Lord will come to pass. It is by trusting in God's promises, by trusting in God's character, that we are able to be strong in the Lord. And that brings us to a second way in which David was able to strengthen himself in the Lord his God. We read in 1 Samuel chapter 30, verse 7 and 8. "And David said to Abiathar the priest, the son of Ahimelech, 'Bring me the ephod.' So Abiathar brought the ephod to David. And David inquired of the Lord, 'Shall I pursue after this band? Shall I overtake them?' He answered him, 'Pursue, for you shall surely overtake and shall surely rescue.'" The ephod was the means, the divinely God-appointed means by which the priest could inquire of the Lord. And we haven't heard David inquiring of the Lord while he's been in exile with the Philistines. So we are relieved to see that David is now reaching out to the Lord for help and guidance. And the Lord gives him clear guidance, and this strengthens him. And it also wins over these disaffected followers. So now, as one, they all set off in pursuit of the Amalekite raiders. They have a general sense of which direction to go, but they will need help finding the exact location of these Amalekite raiders. And God gives them guidance through a most unexpected source. They come across a half-dead Egyptian. He's been abandoned by his Amalekite master 3 days previously when he became sick. A sick, starving, dying of thirst Egyptian is God's surprising means of directing David to the Amalekite camp. David tends to the Egyptian, and when he has recovered, he takes David to the Amalekite camp. 1 Samuel chapter 30, verses 16 to 19. "When he had taken him down, behold, there were spread abroad all over the land, eating and drinking and dancing. because all of the great spoil they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. And David struck them down from twilight until the evening of the next day. And not a man of them escaped except 400 young men who mounted camels and fled. David recovered all that the Amalekites had taken. And David rescued his two wives. Nothing was missing, whether small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything that had been taken. David brought back everything. So the word of the Lord to David was fulfilled. For the Lord had said, "Pursue, for you shall surely overtake and shall surely rescue." It was a miracle rescue. If a mere 400 escaped, how many were there before? How many were killed? David had attacked with only 400 men himself. But God had filled the Amalekites with sufficient wine as to incapacitate them from effective fighting. And so all was recovered and nothing was lost. They also retrieved other valuables and livestock that the Amalekite raiders had taken from other settlements in Gath and Judah. David had cause to give thanks to God that everything that had been taken had been recovered. But then, once more, David has another test to face. David had left Ziklag in pursuit of the Amalekite raiders with 600 men. But as they went on their pursuit, they came to a body of water that needed to be crossed, and they found that 200 of the men were too weary to continue the pursuit, so they left them there. The 400 continued the pursuit, they were successful, and on their return, they met up with the 200 that had been too exhausted to follow. And we read in 1 Samuel chapter 30 from verse 21. Then David came to the 200 men who had been too exhausted to follow David and who had been left at the Brook Besor. And they went out to meet David and to meet the people who were with him. And when David came near to the people, he greeted them. Then all the wicked and worthless fellows among the men who had gone with David said, "Because they did not go with us, we will not give them any of the spoil that we have recovered, except that each man may lead away his wife and children and depart." But David said, "You shall not do so, my brothers, with what the Lord has given us. He has preserved us and given into our hand the band that came against us. Who would listen to you in this matter? For as his share is who goes down into the battle, so shall his share be who stays by the baggage. They shall share alike." And he made it a statute and a rule in Israel from that day forward to this day. David needed diplomacy and he needed decisiveness. We are told that among his followers there are wicked and worthless fellows, and David needed to contend with them. David diffuses the division between the men by calling them brothers, emphasizing their unity. And he also points out that it is the Lord who has given them victory over the Amalekites and put all this plunder into their hands. So David and all the people with him have seen the guidance and the promise from the Lord through Abiathar the priest. And they've all seen the miraculous provision of the Egyptian guide. And they've all seen the inebriated Amalekites who were defeated by David's small band. But these wicked and worthless fellows saw only that their own power had been at work in the rescue. They said, because they did not go with us, we will not give them any of the spoil that we have recovered. These wicked and worthless fellows have a philosophy of works. They have acquired these possessions, this plunder, by their own power. And they only are entitled to possess it. But David held to a philosophy of grace. What they had received was the gift from God. And it is by God's grace that David's diplomacy, his God-centeredness, his decisiveness has won the day. So, I will conclude by saying that in the Bible, we are shown David's failures as well as his successes. And sustaining him through all of this is the grace of God. When David was established as king over Israel, the prophet Nathan brought a word from the Lord to David, which we read in 1 Chronicles chapter 17. From verse 7. Now therefore, thus shall you say to my servant David, thus says the Lord of hosts, I took you from the pasture, from following the sheep, to be prince over my people Israel. And I have been with you wherever you have gone, and have cut off all your enemies from before you. And I will make for you a name like the name of the great ones of the earth. And I will appoint a place for my people, Israel, and will plant them, that they may dwell in their own place and be disturbed no more. So God says to David, I have been with you wherever you have gone. God was with David every step of the way, even when it didn't seem like it. And this wasn't only for David's benefit. It was also for God's people, Israel. God prepared David through various trials to develop his character and his leadership skills, to the point where David could be trusted to lead God's people, to lead them in the battles against God's enemies, and to lead them in loyal devotion to the Lord. This was David's calling. And for all of God's people, he takes us from where we were, and he makes us to become his people. When we live by faith, when we live in dependence upon his grace moment by moment, then we find that he is constantly equipping us for the tasks of today and constantly preparing us for the tasks of tomorrow. His grace has brought us safe thus far, and his grace will lead us home. Amen.